Welcome to episode 154 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live from Microsoft Ignite. This is a show about Office 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss a topic or recent news and how it relates to you. In this episode, Ben and Scott are joined by Ramiro and Stefan from the Azure AD team. They sit down and discuss securing Microsoft 365 and the options available in Azure AD to help keep your data secure. We also have our special giveaway from Microsoft Ignite in this episode, so be sure to listen closely to the entire episode to find out how you can have a chance to win. All right, so here we are, Scott, day five of Ignite, Friday afternoon.
You've made it.
I've made it. You've made it.
Huh.
We have all made it.
I made something.
We're here. We survived Universal last night.
We did.
It helped that your ride got canceled. You waited an hour and a half for a ride.
Wow. I did.
And then it got closed because it broke.
Like, Hagrid broke down right when I was in sight
really?
Of it. It was absolutely crazy.
That was the first one I ran to and then waited for 50 minutes just after the park was open.
But I should have done that.
Yeah, but, you should have.
Yeah, because it was awesome. Sorry about that.
Well, there's the whole like food, people, beer thing on the way.
And true.
You get distracted
pretty easily walking through the park.
Hey, yeah. and Scott, we have some new voices on the podcast. They just kind of jumped in here.
Sorry.
We should introduce them. So we have a couple guys here from Microsoft, and I tried to pronounce names before, and rather than try to pronounce their names and butcher them, I'll just let you two introduce yourselves, who you are, what you do at Microsoft, and we'll dive into our discussion today kind of on Azure AD security.
Cool. Sure. So my name is Ramiro Calderon. I'm a program manager in the Azure AD engineering team. I am part of what we call the customer experience team. And our job is basically making sure our customers deploy our service. And
okay.
Part of that is learning what do we need to build in order to help them to be successful. Also encourage them to actually use what we already produce for them. So
all right. That's always good when they use what you build, right?
Exactly. It's very good. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Building, it's nice. Consumption is better.
Absolutely. And my team in particular also works on developing best practices, reusable content and workshops so we can reuse across multiple customers and across our team internally as well.
Okay.
So this makes my introduction a lot easier because I can copy like 90% of that. Mm-hmm. So Stefan van der Wiele, also a PM in the program manager in the identity division. Next to the helping our customers use our product and getting the feedback back into the product, my team also looks after readiness for our folks in the field. And next to that, we're looking at doing advocacy, so speaking at community events, all those type of things. My focus there is I'm based in the Netherlands as one of the two folks on my team. Now, my focus is on European events, so getting identity sessions on community events.
All right, and they let you come to Orlando.
They do, yeah.
All right,
yeah.
Yeah. No bigger community event than this
exactly.
one, right?
So that was one of my, and next to doing a session, boot time, it's definitely connecting with the community and making sure that we're known there. So,
yeah. All right, very cool. So the whole concept of identity of Azure AD is interesting because I come from more of that Office 365, Microsoft 365 background. Scott does a lot more Azure stuff. And this is one of those services that is essentially a core fundamental service of both of those things in terms of securing both Azure and securing Microsoft 365.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's really important to know that if you use any Microsoft service that has something to do with authentication, so signing in, it's Azure Active Directory that's behind it. So I think there's a lot of folks out there that using one of the services and not aware that they're actually using our product as well. But next to that, really important is that I really like the sentence as in, it is something, our product is not for Microsoft, but from Microsoft. So we're also focusing on other apps, connecting them, securing them, and making it easier for users to sign in, but especially making it more secure for users to sign in.
Right, and kind of before we dive into some of the technical details, you guys actually did have an announcement at Ignite around that, around some improvements to Azure AD, some licensing that I think previously you had to pay for. It was Azure AD, it was either a P1 or a P2 license that mm-hmm. is now free for everybody. So what was kind of that announcement? What are you guys rolling out here at Ignite around that?
What we announced in this conference is that Azure MFA is free for our customers because we're not seeing customers actually protecting themselves. So what we announced basically is that if you use the Authenticator app, Yep. You can use it in your tenant, and then you just turn on the defaults. I think, Stefan, the new tenants are going to be secure with this security defaults, right?
Yeah. Okay, so MFA will be on by default in any new tenant
In any
now.
New tenant that
exactly.
you create from now on.
Yep. And then if you already have a tenant, you turn it on. The idea is that we give you default policy that protects you with multi-factor authentication for your application behind Azure AD.
Okay, and this isn't just for Office 365 apps now, but this is for any app that's connected to Azure AD, both internal Microsoft, Azure, Microsoft 365, as well as any third-party apps that may be using Azure AD, Azure AD for authentication.
Correct.
Absolutely.
And, and it also applies to hybrid scenarios. So one thing we also announced this week is our partnerships with F5, with Citrix, with Zscaler, where you can have your, let's say, on-prem applications that maybe cannot talk the modern protocols that Azure AD is doing. But through their products, you can connect them to Azure AD and add this MFA protection to it. And those security defaults, I think it's good to mention that it's not only MFA for users, it's also MFA for your admins. So if it's one switch, if you turn it on, you get MFA for users, for admins. And next to that, there's something called what we call legacy authentication, which means that's a form of authentication where you cannot add MFA to. So this is really the most common way for an attacker to get into an environment, because they know if they use that type of authentication, you never need to do MFA. So part of the security default is basically blocking that type of authentication. So that's another thing that's included in that one.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. We did record this live at Microsoft Ignite, and as a benefit, Microsoft is giving away Microsoft Surface earbuds to listeners. So this is a sweepstakes. To enter it, you just have to go to https://podcastsweepstakes, and it is not case sensitive. Just make sure you go do this before December 15 of 2019, and you'll get entered in to win those Surface earbuds. Okay, so is that going to be on by default now? Because
yes.
I think previously, or older tenants, you actually had to go turn off legacy authentication.
Correct.
Because originally it was on by default. And a lot of people would go, from what I've seen, people go turn on MFA, but then still leave their legacy off enabled.
That's very common. And a lot of customers still, despite our best efforts to document and encourage, a lot of customers haven't finished the job on closing that last part of the flow. A lot of customers still have some POP, IMAP, SMTP, EWS with basic auth, and they don't know they have it on. So that's one of the main initiatives that we really want customers to go and do. So hopefully these new defaults are going to help us to get that at scale.
I think as a policy, that gives flexibility as well. So you're still going to need potentially break glass accounts and secured things. That doesn't change, but you just land in a better place on day one should you start with a brand new tenant.
Yep.
Excellent. And potentially have some impacts if you have an existing tenancy out there. And ooh, what's this new screen? And what am I seeing? Authenticator app. That's a little new.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I think by turning on MFA, of course, I would say everyone should turn it on, but there's also a part of it which is the end user education. Because if you put on those security defaults and an end user will see that screen and we're like, what do I need to do? I need to install an app. How does it work? So that's definitely something you need to consider when you're going to put this on, to see how can I train my users to use it, so they are aware that what is this screen? How does it work? And why do I need to do this?
And one of the main things that we announced also this Ignite is what we call the report only mode for conditional access policy. So if you already have a tenant and you're thinking about, you know, stepping up your security a notch, you can roll out the conditional access policy and turn it on the auto report mode so that you can see the effects. And our vice president, Alex Simons, called it like do not fire me mode, which is pretty true. I mean, we've seen many cases where customers fat finger something and then everybody's locked out or everybody gets prompted. And that's a tough conversation when the CEO is the one affected. So this is a very important tool to go on and leverage as Stefan is saying, you are introducing a new change in the environment. It's a great way to measure the effect before
you
actually
go. So that kind of turns on reporting on what MFA would do if it got enabled for everybody. So it doesn't actually turn it on. It just starts creating like a log or report of, if you were to enable this, these are the effects it would have.
Correct.
One of my customers actually used it to log legacy authentication, right?
Okay.
So they did all the policies, they follow our documentation and everything, but they say, oh, let's put in a report only mode and see what happened. And he found that a lot of people were still blocked, even though everybody upgraded to Office 2016 mm-hmm. and then the 10 was enabled for Modern Auth. So it was a little bit of a surprise. So he had to go and find other data sources to go and corroborate and understand what happened there. And it turned out it was an Outlook plugin that was still using legacy authentication under the covers. Those are the kind of things that very hard to find.
Don't know until you see them hit
exactly.
that kind of management plane and come through and be drawn
correct.
In.
Correct.
And I think just to have some of that there out of the box is nice as well because it did used to be gated behind a ton of licensing to get in there and see some of that. So having that better posture and having it just be approachable.
Like, hey.
It's good. We want you to be in this place. Because the safer you feel, like as a customer, the safer you feel as a service provider, everybody wins in that case.
Correct. Yeah. Right. So one question. In like some of the documentation before, the documentation has always said, go turn on MFA for anybody. Use those baseline policies. But you probably want one or two break glass accounts. Mm-hmm. One or two accounts that maybe don't have MFA turned on because there have been some issues every once in a while where MFA isn't working in Azure AD, is that still the recommendation then? Is because it's going to be on by default, obviously all your admin accounts are going to have MFA on by default. Mm-hmm. Is it still going to be that recommendation? Go create just one or two really secure password accounts, because you can go up to 256 characters now, that don't have MFA on for that reason if you do have some type of MFA issue? I think actually what the recommendation now would be also ties in with another announcement or another feature that we have there. So the support for FIDO2 keys. So FIDO2 is a security key, and actually you can use that key to sign in without a password. And that key is by default two-factor. It's two-factor because it's a key that you have and there's a pin on it, or you have a fingerprint that you need to put on it to sign in. So our recommendation now is definitely for those break glass accounts is to get a FIDO2 key and enroll that account with that key. So you're not enabling MFA on that account, but because you're using that key, it is a second factor by default. And the only thing you need if you want to use that account is that key and that pin. So you would enroll that user with that key, put the key in the safe with the pin in a different safe, and then when something happens, you can just grab that key, put it in, and sign in with that account. And it will not use the MFA service. So in that case, you can still sign in. But you don't need to set a password. It's a private public key pair that's on that device, that's protected on that device. So it's much more secure than only setting a password on an account.
Did FIDO2 keys, did they GA this week, or are they still in preview?
So it's still in preview. It's public preview. I think it's really, so of course it depends a bit on which division you talk with, what a public and a private and GA means.
I think there's divisions, and then there's the way customers interpret that too, right?
Definitely. So I think it would be good to clarify from a public preview perspective. So normally what we would say if we put something in public preview, we say, actually this is ready to go GA, but we want to test it at scale. So there are a few features that definitely in some scenarios, in this admin scenario, you could definitely use it for in a production environment. Having said that, it depends really on the preview.
Yep.
But normally in a public preview, we say this is ready to go, and the only thing we want to do is test it at a scale, maybe make a few small adjustments, and then go to GA.
Yeah, and then we use the telemetry over the public preview phase to understand like usage patterns or some adjustments that we may need to do in the documentation, for example. But for the most part, it's part of our engineering process to have that period of public preview before we kind of rubber stamp say that you're graduating.
Well, you need the loop, right?
Exactly.
Like it has to come back and be closed a little bit
to
get you where you need to be.
And to give an example on the FIDO2 piece, I would not advise anyone to now fully go passwordless with FIDO2 keys with all your users. Because if you look at the whole enrollment cycle, all that type of thing, there are a few gaps still that we need to close before we can do so. But in this specific admin breakless account scenario, it is perfect to enroll the key. Yeah. We actually had people at the booth this week, just we were handing out keys, and on the spot, they just secured their admin account with the FIDO2 key.
Really?
And I had someone standing next to me saying, oh man, this gave me goosebumps. this is so cool. I always think that's funny, especially at a session when you sign in and the whole audience applaud because you're signed in. And this guy was so excited that this works so easily, enrolling the key. So
Scott, you did not tell me they were giving away security keys at their booth.
They neglected to tell me this when I was standing there for 30 minutes.
Do you have any keys left?
you know, it's Friday. Probably not.
We ran out yesterday afternoon. Right.
As IT professionals in the cloud era, sometimes it feels like we don't speak the same language as the rest of the organization. So when stakeholders from finance or other departments start asking about a specific project or team's Azure costs, they don't always realize how much work is involved in obtaining that information, sifting through cluttered CSVs and a complex mess of metadata in order to manually create custom views and reports. It's a real headache. On top of helping you understand and reduce your organization's overall Azure spend, ShareGate Overcast lets you group resources into meaningful cost hubs and map them to real-world business scenarios. This way, you can track costs in the way that makes most sense with your corporate structure, whether it's by product, business unit, team, or otherwise. It's a flexible, intuitive, and business-friendly way of tracking Azure infrastructure costs, and it's only available in ShareGate Overcast. Find out more on ShareGate.com/ITPro.
Fido, too, you have the password list with the keys, but you also have password list that's in preview through the Authenticator app. Correct. I know I've enabled that on mine. Is that also using Fido 2, the same security, or is that going through a different kind of MFA, I guess, endpoint or a different protocol? Or what's the difference there?
So it's the same target experience, but the implementation is slightly different. So Fido 2 provides a couple of standards, right? So one is what we call the CTAP, the client piece interacting with the authenticator, and there's another one, part of the protocol, which is web authentication, which is specifically for web applications
okay.
in a browser, right? So that's part of that kind of umbrella of standards. With the authenticator app, it's a different implementation, but the principle is the same. We have a key, public, private key kind of approach, which
yep.
basically all these passwordless protocols are yep. hinging on the same approach. So what we have there is basically the same, you know, you have to prove a possession of the private key, you sign a blob with the timestamp and all that. It's just the authenticator has a different flow where the way you send the challenge to the user is different and is basically built into, it's a proprietary custom flow, but
yep. okay.
essentially it's the same
yep.
outcome. In fact, one of the things that I think Stefan and I were trying to emphasize during our presentation was that you have all these passwordless options
uh-huh.
complement each other. It's not like, oh, I have to make a choice between Fido or passwordless sign-in or Windows Hello. Actually, effective strategy will include all three because they serve different purposes. So Stefan was saying the portable key. So you have the private key in a portable token. That's
yep.
great for admin, emergency access, some VIP cases, for example. But unfortunately, those are prone to like the day-to-day users may drop it or the dog eats it or whatever.
Yep.
And then you have to have choices, right? So the phone, what we're finding, and it's so successful in the authenticator app, is that people rarely forget their phone. They freak out if I leave the phone, right?
So, right. Like you get in the car to go somewhere and you check your package. Uh-huh. You're like, wallet, phone, I can leave.
Exactly.
Yeah, my wife says it every time I get in the car because I immediately
yep,
reach
do
down.
Yeah.
And I have a look of fear on my face because she specifically calls out, that is a look of true fear. That I've left my phone or my wallet or my AirPods.
Yeah.
Or something. It's like, it's genuine.
Yeah. We're learning fear and pain are great motivators. So there you go. So
how many times I was feeling my pockets. I was like, where's my phone? And I was actually on the phone.
Yeah, that happens to me quite a bit too. So yeah, exactly. So those are very complementary options, and then I think an enterprise strategy should include all of them.
If you look at going passwordless today, the option we have, which is GA, is Windows Hello for Business.
Okay.
And by the way, Windows Hello for Business is FIDO 2 certified. So that means that if I go to a website that supports FIDO 2, I can actually sign in using Windows Hello for Business because it's using the same protocol
yeah.
that's behind
Good
it.
Good point.
So I think that makes Windows Hello for Business a really, really cool feature. The reason why we have that other options, Windows Hello for Business requires you to have Windows 10 specific hardware. So Authenticator app, for example, could be great for use when you're on a Mac that doesn't support Hello for Business.
Like me. Like yeah, I can't look at my camera. And
yeah.
yeah, Windows Hello does not work for me.
We see through the sticker that's an Apple device.
I tried to hide it before. No.
And I think that's also what you see, and within Microsoft, we deploy Windows Hello for Business and try to get rid of passwords as far as much as possible. But still, there are some applications that require that password that's there. So passwordless is a journey. I think we also emphasized that during our presentation. I would focus right now to look into how can we protect that password that's still there. Because we cannot get rid of it today, but we can make sure that it's a strong password. And with strong, it's not like that it needs to be complex. Because if it's going to be complex, in the end, the user is going to write it down, forget it. And password 123 exclamation mark with a capital P is also complex. But it's the first password attackers will try to use to see if they can get into your account.
Yeah, so talk about complex password, because I've read some articles on this too, where it seems like in the past, it was focused on those complex passwords. A lot of requirements were 8 to 12 characters. Yep. You have to do complexity. And the more and more I've read, it's not about the complexity of the characters, but it has to do with the length of the string, because it takes longer to decrypt something that's 256 characters. Because I know that's something you guys have also recently done, is increase the length of Azure AD passwords from... It used to be a max of 16, and now you can go up to 256.
Yeah.
So what we found based on the data is that the password complexity, traditional complexity-driven and periodic expirations are really actually counter to security environment. Because we find is that we humans are pretty bad at entropy, so we always have my kid's name and 2019 or the month or whatever.
Yep.
And then we sometimes have this clever A. It's not an A, it's an at sign, the dollar instead of the S and all that. And those patterns are well studied and well automated by bad actors. And those are the first guys whose password gets compromised. Yep. Those pattern nodes. So the length itself is more like a mechanism to get a larger entropy and to have people to do like passphrases instead of passwords. But in general, I think the main thing, and again, this is part where we are bringing a lot of cloud-powered tools back to those passwords, even if they're on-premises, to protect the users from their own lack of passwords that are good.
So we have a database of commonly used passwords, which we can use when a user sets their password. So if you use self-service password reset as part of Azure Active Directory, actually by default we will check that list if someone sets a password. So you can imagine password 123 exclamation mark is on there, but we also check for P at and all those variations, and we have a scoring system to see if you put in a password. So if it's only like I do a password, but then a lot of other stuff next to it, then you need to do like more than three different things behind it to make sure that's a unique password and not on that list. And we extended that also to the on-prem world, because we see a lot of enterprises that are not in the cloud-only state, they're in that hybrid state. So you have the ability to protect your Active Directory on-prem also with this same list. So that means that if I just go to my domain joint machine, press Control-Delete, reset my password, well, also check that same list, and we give you the ability to add custom words to it. I can tell you, when you're a Microsoft employee and try to set a password which contains Seahawks, that will not work. I think that's really important, and this is a really easy tool to deploy and use and give you a lot of benefit, because it's going to make sure that that password, what's there, is not an easy guessable password. And so this would be going to passwordless. This is one of the first things that we need to do, because you cannot get rid of your password.
Everyone on your team is unique. So is SkillMeUp.com. Only SkillMeUp provides the bridge from fundamentals to certification paths to advanced skills to accelerate digital transformation with one subscription and five ways to learn. Start your free pilot today and supercharge your IT and Microsoft Azure skills by visiting skillmeup.com/pilot or click the link in the show notes below.
You break down those walls. And I just want to be clear, like when you said that, you're talking about the Windows sign-in screen.
Correct.
Not going into a web browser and saying, oh, we do password write back and now we're doing a live check against.
Precisely. Like
that is straight from, so from an end user experience perspective.
They don't even notice.
It's seamless.
It's seamless, yeah. Actually, the team that wrote the code for Active Directory, they created a plugin on for your domain controllers, which is part of the password reset process. So that's how we've implemented that.
Yeah, and one of the things that we're finding, so our team also looks after the consumer side of Microsoft products, is what we call the Microsoft identity.
Okay.
Right, the Microsoft account, sorry.
Microsoft account. Yeah, Microsoft
account. Yep. MSAs.
MSAs.
Have to edit that part out. That's how, when we implemented that approach to the passwords, that was the most successful technique used to get to render the password spraying effective in the Microsoft account ecosystem. So after we kind of learn and fine-tune that those algorithms up there, that's how we basically propagated that approach to the enterprise side. Yeah. So that's very, very important that if customers, password spray is one of the most common attacks, and unfortunately it's very effective. Stefan, how much is the percentage if we like a success for password spray?
I think it's 1%. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So in a large environment, you know, 10,000 employees.
So across all those tenancies, hundreds of millions of authentication attempts.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not just in Microsoft environment, in general in the industry. Typically, a password space has a success rate of 1%. So if you really want to make sure that you minimize that risk in your environment, go and turn that on. It's going to save you a lot of time. Time and sleep.
And it was a good... So a lot of our protection stuff originates from the consumer side where we already build it at scale. Mm-hmm. So the thing that we have is what's called identity protection that looks at a risk of a certain session. Actually, that system was first built for our consumer market to protect those accounts. And then we made a version for the enterprise accounts as well, protecting also not only Microsoft apps, but also third-party apps.
Okay,
to Azure
which kind of makes sense because from the consumer side, there's no admin controls like we have within our consumer accounts to protect it. So it falls all on you guys to protect consumer accounts. Yep. So you can test that stuff out, use it to essentially protect yourselves from MSA account getting compromised, and then roll those features over to the enterprise side and give them more control over their own enterprise environments.
Yeah, and we also share information between those two environments. So, for example, if there's an attacker that tries to get into an Xbox account, we write down the information that we get from that attacker, so the IP address and source, and share that with our enterprise customers. So if someone would go to that attacker and say, okay, here's some money, go attack this company, we already know that the attacker is there and can protect against it.
Yeah, and that's one thing I try to tell a lot of my clients, because for whatever reason, people still think, oh, it's in the cloud, it's not as secure. And I'm like, you guys have a massive security team. And if you're trying to protect your on-prem information or your on-prem network, you only have the information of people trying to get to your direct environment. Yep. When you're in the cloud, someone trying to get into some other massive national bank, you can take that information and then use it to protect every other account in Office 365 because you're watching so many different signals and IP addresses that you have all of that data to apply across the entire environment to help secure
absolutely.
It.
And then this is part of one big advantage of running a multi-tenant massive scale system that is not just Azure AD or Office 365, it's also Azure, it's also our consumer systems. So we have a lot of telemetry and a lot of machine learning built on top of that data to zero in patterns such as password spray. Good luck finding password spray on your own. What we're seeing typically is that the password spray actors, this is just blast a lot of tenants at once. And you don't know the other tenants unless there's a common like entry point. And that's one benefit for customers. If we're finding finally our message about turning on password hash sync is syncing in our customers, we really want them to consider strongly to use password hash sync to also authenticate, because we are rendering that credential challenge experience and we have a lot of additional protections that we call smart lockout. So, for example, if a password spray attacker is we zero in the IP, any attempt to authenticate from those IPs, even if they have the password right, we have tools to kind of throttle the basically, we block them.
Yep.
But that's a lot of things that customers sometimes have a... It's hard to obtain on their own, despite their own believing that they can do it better. But sometimes customers find out the hard way to...
That is a thing that happens.
Yeah.
They only know what they know until they really know it.
Yeah, right.
So that's what I was going to... We've talked a lot about the passwordless passwords, the FIDO2. Mm-hmm. What other things from that Azure AD perspective should people be thinking about when it comes to securing their Azure environment or their Office 365 environment beyond just passwords, MFA, passwordless, making sure that they're not using common passwords, the whole password ecosystem? What else is there?
I think it's really good to look at how to protect your privileged accounts. So it's something called privileged identity management, there we go, which can help you protect also administrators from other workloads. And it also integrates with Azure. So that means that if someone, for example, needs to stop a virtual machine, so he needs to have access rights to do so, you probably don't want to give that person access rights all the time, because if that account gets compromised, the attacker can shut down that machine. And this is just a machine. We can also talk about being a global administrator or something like that. So with privileged identity management, you can say this user is eligible to become this role, and this fully integrates with Azure RBAC. So that means that if I need to do some maintenance and shut down that VM, I just go to the portal I requested for that specific time, and there's an approval workflow behind it, there's auditing behind it, and I can only get that access at that specific time for that hour to do my job, and after that the access will be revoked. So I think that's a really powerful thing, especially when you do a lot of Azure and protecting those privileged accounts that are there.
When it comes to email, Outlook and Office 365 are fantastic, but sometimes there are things you'd like to do that aren't implemented. Sperry Software creates Outlook add-ins and Office 365 services that fill in these gaps. For instance, there are Outlook add-ins to automatically print emails and/or attachments, save emails to PDF, send out recurring emails, or how about a warning when you're going to do a reply to all instead of a normal reply? Find these and many more email productivity solutions. Get started today by visiting www.sperrysoftware.com/cloudit.
Another thing that we recommend besides the password is the device, right? So a lot of customers stop their journey in MFA and think they're good, but unfortunately, they're missing out on the value of adding the device. So enterprises that have a traditional domain, which is 95% or more of the enterprises today, they can add security controls around the fact that machine is domain joined. And that's an easy to deploy. I mean, you have to prepare and everything, like everything else at scale, but you can deploy it and spare your users from MFA prompts and actually start looking more like a device in the security posture, so people can log in from the company-owned device or the managed phone instead of MFA. And I think that's, you know, taking a step up on the security posture. And fortunately, we're not seeing a lot of customers. Well, not seeing a lot, but let's just say that we would like to see it deploy more than we are.
Okay, and that's using the conditional access,
right,
in Azure AD?
Yeah. And I think it's not only a benefit from a security perspective, but also for the end user. Because if you use that device posture, so you know that a device is managed and healthy, and based on that you can say, oh, maybe this time I don't need to do MFA. So as an end user experience, I don't need to do MFA like 5 times a day. I just sign into my machine, and because you're on that machine, we have some more info about you, we can give you access to the data that is protected by Azure.
Absolutely. And then the other thing is that if you overdo these prompts, despite of the security, you know, team sometimes think like the more prompts are good, it is actually not good, because then you're conditioning your user just to blindly approve and just say yes because they are used to it all the time. You know, the other day we were talking about this, actually in our presentation, is that we did find an app in one of the biggest mobile devices in the marketplace that automatically approves all the MFA notifications coming from that device another MFA product. So it's like crazy. So is the painfully so much that somebody saw a market opportunity in auto-approve, so people are spared from that pain. So, but that is slippery slope, right? Because then that's a hacker does the same thing. Oh, okay, approve. Because you get so annoyed all the time by the prompts.
So you get used to them. If they're 8 to 5 working from the office, they don't get any MFA prompts. So that when they do, it actually makes them stop and think, why am I getting this MFA prompt this time? Because it's abnormal.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And you're touching on another subject, which is the risk. A risk is for customers who are using identity protection, they can even automate risk. So you can say, if the identity is at risk, I mean, Azure AD does a lot of signals to qualify the risk of the user or a signing session. And then based on that, you can force even reset the password. So that's where you put all the, you know, Swiss Army knife different pieces together. Then you can come up with a very solid posture, right? So you can say if a user is at risk because, you know, there was a breach and then somebody put the same username and password, which by the way happens to what? I think 70% or so people reuse passwords based on study, if it's probably more. But then if you have that scenario, you can automate the response saying, I'm going to force the user to reset the password and get them back to productivity. So there's device posture and risk, two tools in the toolbox to go and improve your posture all up.
All right. Very cool. Is there anything else? We're kind of running up on our time here in the podcast center, but anything else you guys want to throw out there, wrap up with before we call it a day?
Yeah, so our team so we work with the largest customers all over the world, and we are learning alongside our customers what works and what doesn't work when deploying services at scale. So we are basically documenting our findings and learnings in what we call deployment plans. So if our listeners can go on AKMS/deployment plans, they can find all like pre-made project plans with best practices, how to roll it out gradually, how to get stakeholders on board, all those sorts of things that we have learned for their own benefit. So go and check that out. Another thing, you were talking about security posture with multiple factors and break glass accounts and all that.
Yep.
Let's go to AKMS/resilient AAD, and then you have all those details around it. Free MFA, AKMS.
AKMS/enable MFA.
All right, perfect. Okay. An important one. Well, thanks a lot. Thanks for coming down, sitting down with us for a little bit and talking all about security and Azure AD, and maybe we'll have you on again. I'm sure the landscape will change, and
yeah, we can, of course. Of course, it changes every month. So.
Yeah, exactly. Well, all thanks right. again.
Well,
safe
thank
travels.
You for the,
thank you. You
thank,
too.
Not a problem. Safe
thank
travels.
Thank you for the opportunity.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.